This is the Shape America podcast, hosted by Colin Brooks
and Matt Pomeroy, making 50 million strong by 2029. Welcome to the Shape America podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pomeroy, and I'm hanging out with a great group of adapted physical educators. Specifically, I'm hanging out with Meredith Morton and Tim Swenson, and we're discussing all things adapted physical education. And before we get down to the nitty-gritty of this episode, I just want to remind you some of those other episodes that have been released lately. So if you're looking for some more health and physical education, professional development, you can tune into those and just pick up some great tips, tricks, and tools of the trade. Just to add to the repertoire of things that you do as you know, teachers out there. So we've also released in October a health literacy series, which was just fantastic discussion on how to continue to push for that health literacy in health education class. And we talked about all the different ways to incorporate technology and quality uses of technology in both health and physical education. And again, just some amazing sharing going on from those passionate educators in that regards. And, we really took a dive into teacher leadership at the beginning of this year, and we spotlighted physical education teacher Jessica Shawley and a health educator, Andy Milne. And, you know, they just discussed teacher leadership and how to become a teacher leader and how to continue moving forward and helping other teachers move forward as well. So lots of good things out there to tune into. So check it out on Podomatic.com or on iTunes at the Shape America podcast, and, you know, see what you've missed and make sure you download and get caught up. We really appreciate you tuning in and, being a part of the show. So thank you. So this is part two of the Adapted Physical Education Inclusion podcast. And if you missed part one, make sure you go back, download and listen. But this is what we talked about. And we really looked at what it is to be like an adaptive physical educator. What does a day in the life of a teacher look like? And, you know, we looked at what is inclusion and, you know, should all students with disabilities be included in PE? We looked at how to develop a culture of inclusion within your district. And, you know, we looked at some of the assessments out there, that adapted physical educators might need to use to assess their students. So again, a great discussion on that. So without further ado, I'm going to send it over to my good buddy and host, Colin Brooks. And Colin will kind of take us right into part two here. So, all right, off to you, Colin.
Awesome. Okay, so we've covered a lot of stuff. We've talked quite a bit about paraprofessionals, and a little bit about this question I'm about to ask. But if it was day one from both of your perspectives, and you had a group of paraprofessionals, how would you both individually prepare them to be within a general inclusive physical education environment?
I think one of the first approaches I would have with them is, having them understand the expectations of each individual student who they were working with. By reviewing the IEP, what are their goals? What are the accommodations? So as they are working with their student, they if this is someone that's unfamiliar with them, or to them, that they know, what are the main goals? What are we working for? What are the behaviors? Are there any triggers for the behavior to, I guess, make it as predictable for the paraprofessionals to be successful with that student? Reviewing that student information is vital. I think that's probably one of the first things that I would approach when it came to paraprofessionals. in my experience too, as I stated earlier, I came into a situation where the paraprofessionals knew those students a lot better than I do. So it was sort of a reversal. I was asking them a lot of questions. What do I need to do as far as behaviors? What, you know, what are some things that I need to work on? I can see the IEP goals, but not having worked with the students and having experienced paraprofessionals working with me, I use them. So I guess it all depends on where you're coming from.
Yeah, I tell my paraprofessionals to wear their sneakers. A lot of times they come in, you know, dress shoes or clogs or anything else, and I just tell them to bring sneakers to school and keep them at school, because when they have PE or when I come, I expect you to move. And like Colin said earlier, you have to be friendly, but you have to delegate. A lot of the times they might not know what to do, and you might take that as they're just being lazy, but they're looking for you as the adapted teacher, as the PE teacher, to tell them something, to give them some guidelines. You know, hey, I've got station A, B, and C. I want you to take Johnny to B, and I want you to do this skill with him, you know, instead of just assuming that they are not wanting to help because they might be on the sidelines. Most paraprofessionals don't know a lot about PE. They don't have the extensive background and the training that we have. They don't have any clue. They see it as overwhelming, as frustrating. You know, some PE classes move very quickly, and they might shut down because their student can't do the pace that the PE class is at. You know, so I tell instructional assistants, if I get any pushback, I usually just say you're there to help that student. Just like you help them in math, you help them in science, you help them in library, you help them in their core classes, you help them across the board. PE is just another class that you should be prepared, because we're exercising and moving is no different. Most of the time that works.
Yeah, good call. Get on.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, one more thing I was going to say. One thing I do really well with my consult students is I will make, and even my direct students, I will make a PE teacher pocket reference inclusion guide. And I give it to the PE teacher and to the aide. And it came from Dr. Martin Block's book, Including Students with Disabilities in General PE. I highly recommend that book. He's had a couple of editions now. But the PE pocket reference basically lists, on one side, it lists what the class is doing. On the other side, on one column is what the class does. The other column is what your student should do. So it breaks it down. Okay, my students are running laps. So the student with disability should do maybe fewer laps. They should run on the inside of the court instead of the outside of the court, etc. You know, we're doing soccer out on this field. Well, you should continue working with my student, maybe on the sidelines with dribbling back and forth. So it gives a very clear-cut thing for the aides to use and for the PE teachers to use as far as what to do with students at every level, in every activity.
Yeah, and a good instructional assistant that is motivated to help those students is worth their weight in gold. I've had the experience at both ends of some that are very motivated, very creative too, that provide a lot of assistance. But like Meredith said, you do have some, and I don't think it's because they don't want to help, but they're just unsure of what to do. So we need to give them some expectations. There are manuals out there too, and on how to work with paraprofessionals. I believe Laura Lieberman has produced one, and that could just be a good resource to provide to instructional assistants as far as what help can be provided within the classroom as well. So.
And good thoughts. And I still remember the great Mike Doyle kind of talking about it being a dance. You know, it's, you bop over to the paraprofessional and see how things are doing, give them some suggestions and hop away. And it's, you know, continuing that back and forth. And sometimes you can be away longer, and sometimes you've got to check up just a little bit more. But I like sometimes maybe just that encouragement, as you said, Meredith, with, you know, wear your gym shoes and, you know, make sure you're ready to go and ready to just kind of be a part of it, because we'll definitely need you. And I think that can get the right mindset going. So very good thoughts. Thank you. I want to turn to a little bit more on the curriculum planning or scope and sequence. And maybe as a general physical education teacher, you know, with just the thoughts of adapted physical education students, you know, being in your classes. So are there any specific thoughts as we're considering curriculum and scope and sequence? You know, just knowing that we're going to have these students coming in. And it, I guess the other way to look at it would be, how well can we tie this to maybe an adapted physical educator's schedule as well, and tying the curriculum together that way? So a couple different thoughts.
I'd be interested to hear your approach, Meredith. I know we have some talks in class about it, but I know you're in the field right now, so I can fill in after you go.
So you're looking at curriculum and scope and sequence of the skills of my students with disabilities compared to or when participating with regular ed? Is that the question you were looking for?
Should we have any thoughts as I guess maybe we're planning the school year as, you know, just for the regular physical educators and knowing that, you know, these students are coming in. So are there some good thoughts or suggestions just as we're planning? But also, I know there's got to be some planning back and forth between the, you know, the regular physical educator and an adapted physical education professional as well. So,
okay. For the most part, I just do with what the PE teachers are doing. So I find out, you know, a week or 2 weeks ahead of a time. Sometimes, if it's a really planned out PE teacher, I find out the year schedule. But I think as a PE teacher, you just need to be aware of your units, be aware of the pacing. Some of my PE teachers run through their units very quickly. They may only do it 1 week. Some of them do it 5 weeks, you know, and I think it's a good idea to do it at least a few weeks, because my students are going to take longer to do the skills. They need more practice trials. I think at the secondary level, I love this shift that's going away from competitive sports and games to more inclusive, more fitness, more lifetime leisure. I'm finding a lot easier to include my students at the secondary level when they're doing workout in the weight room, or when they're doing, something like volleyball that's not competitive, more recreation style, with the more inclusion.
Meredith, I just wanted to ask you a follow-up to... you know, you bring up a good point about how we develop our scope and sequence as a general physical education teacher. And how do you feel? I mean, a lot of times there's different trends in developing this, right? How do you feel about teaching a week and then revisiting it, you know, a month later from an adapted physical education perspective? How do you think that
actually
impacts?
Yeah, I do that. Sorry to cut you off, but that's what I do. When I do my units, I do 3 units at 2 weeks each, because we have 9-week quarters. So I do 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, and then I spend the last 2, sometimes 3 weeks, depending on scheduling, reviewing those units that I did in the previous weeks. It's immensely helpful. The kids come back to the things that they really love to do. I learned what didn't work in those, you know, units that I was trying to teach those 2 weeks. So I think at all levels, I think it's beneficial to teach the skill, stay on it for 1 or 2 weeks, you know, go back to something else, but near the ending of your quarter, revisit it. Our kids need, I think they said it takes 2,000 trials to master a skill. They need a lot of time, and that's for regular ed kid. So you're looking at thousands of opportunities that these kids need to have to throw a ball, to kick, to catch, to strike. The more practice, the better. I love the idea of coming back to units and skills after you've done them and take a break.
Yep, I agree. And a concept that we talk about, a term I guess we talk, is overteaching for some of our students with special needs, just because of A regular student may take X amount of times to catch on and master or be mature in a skill, whereas we may need that same amount of trials times two in order to try to see some progress. So, and you think you've made progress one day, and then you come back the next day, and you're maybe back to square one, and or you get through that unit, and the idea of revisiting that a week or two later to see has it really stuck. Is an excellent way to test those skills to see is it something that's retained. So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
All right. Thanks for both of you commenting on that. Just a thought that I had as we were speaking about it, you know, just a different perspective. I think that I can speak for myself, you know, you get so caught up in what you're doing that it's important to look at the big picture and all the different people that are coming into your classroom and how that impacts, you know, what they're doing as well. So the next thing that we'd like to talk to you both about is just modifications. You know, I think that this is one thing that there's a lot of things, but one thing that I think about quite a bit, and it's important to think about it. And sometimes I forget, like right before class starts, I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't write down a modification for this student of a disability. I'm like, whoops, you know what I mean? So, it's obviously very important that we put those within our lesson plans and be prepared, for ourselves to do that. So it'd be awesome to hear, you know, the variety of different students that you work with that have disabilities, you know, and maybe some different scenarios you can come up with modifications that general physical education teachers could use.
So I can throw one out there. On my caseload, I think in general, students with autism are much higher numbers than they used to be. So I think that's a very relevant topic. A lot of times I will go to that special ed teacher and I'll find out what behavior or token system that they're using in their special ed class, and I use that in PE. So it might be a token board of 10, they do a skill 10 times, they get a reinforcer, food or break time. I use that a lot. That's super important to getting kids with autism, keeping that structure, keeping that routine, keeping those expectations that they're not supposed to only do it in the classroom, they're supposed to also follow through with it. Using their AAC devices, using their iPads, using anything they have to communicate, they should also be using it in the PE class. That's just continuity across the board so that student learns to use it in a variety of settings and they can communicate with you. If it's just PECs, if it's the picture symbols, they should be using that also in PE. So that's kind of, I throw that out there with kids with autism, but you structure, schedule, routine. That's going to be your biggest thing for kids, including kids with autism in your PE classes, is they like to know exactly what's going to happen. They love having the routine of it. And if you can tell the class what you're going to do as a PE teacher, if you can go in there and let them know what you're going to do that week or that day, you know, then they get in there and they're doing it. And they love that follow through. And I start all of my classes with running. We do stretches and exercises, and then we do a main skill, and then we do a closure. And that, they know it, and they thrive on it. And also being prepared for the changes, the fire drills, the safety drills, the lockdown drills. You know, knowing if those ahead of time, talk with the instructional assistants, talk with the special ed teachers, be able to remove that student to go back to a place where they're more comfortable before that happens. So that's going to be also knowing your students that have other needs, being aware of that.
Yeah, and another approach I take with students with autism, I guess not another, but on top of that, is just understanding what are their likes and interests and incorporating those into my lessons whenever I can, too. I worked with a young boy with autism who just absolutely could not get enough country music in his day. And so when his class came in, and it was an inclusion class, our warm-up songs were all Brooks and Dunn. It was all country, because that just fired him up, you know. All the other classes had all their, you know, Kids Bop or whatever, but for this young man, it was nothing but country, because it was motivating to him. In one of my adapted aquatics class now, we have a young boy with autism who was terrified of the water, but he loved using electronics in the computer. He was practicing doing emails, so I took an old keyboard And I put it in the water one day, and we put it on a kickboard. And it wasn't 5 seconds. He walked into the water, and he wanted to get at that keyboard. And beforehand, it was maybe one toe in the water. Just finding out what are they interested in, and trying to use those as a way to get them involved too. But the foundation of that is the structure and the predictability of what's going to happen, because that's essential for them as well. So.
Just some general strategies that I have used across the board, things like adapted equipment, larger targets, moving students closer to the goals. One I find really helps with inclusion is going at a slower pace with your task analysis. So the rest of the class they're doing basketball, and they start with dribbling or ball handling, then they go to dribbling, then they go to shooting. Well, you know, my student might be a little bit further behind, so we're going to focus on ball handling and dribbling. So slowing down the skill progression is a huge one, because the aides feel overwhelmed, the PE teachers feel overwhelmed, that they have to move this student through as quickly as their regular ed students. Just freeze them. Just stop them at the level that they're comfortable and keep practicing there. It's not going to hurt anybody to stay another extra couple of weeks on that one skill. And they're going to still be able to be included, still doing that one skill, because then the rest of the class has moved on to shooting. Well, they can still do a bounce pass on the sidelines with that student. So they're included. So one of the biggest modifications is not feeling rushed. You know, using the adaptive equipment, modifying the games. One of the things I tell the teachers, the PE teachers, when including, is you don't want to do anything that's going to change the game for the regular ed students. So any inclusion tips you want to give, any ways of modifying the game for my student, shouldn't take away from the rest of the student's learning. So I always try to be creative and come up with ways I can get my students to be included, but the regular ed students are still getting as many practice trials, they're still getting the same game experience, not having to stop their game so that my student can be included. Throwing out extra equipment, you know, always helps. You know, providing extra of everything. I tell PE teachers, just to have an extra football, throw an extra soccer ball out there. Just extras, extras of equipment.
And you know, and I guess we're talking about autism, but you know, some of these adaptations are across the board for different disabilities. But utilizing more than one sensory modality. So if it is an adapted piece of equipment that is either bigger or maybe has a bell in it, that besides, you know, visually having to track it, but they can hear it as well, or it gives them some kind of feedback with a bat. They're doing striking skills, you hit and the bat makes a loud sound, or the ball has a sound, just to help focus attention on that skill a little bit more, utilizing more than one sense as we go through that. But at the same point, keeping the integrity of the game fair for everybody in that classroom, if we're doing an inclusive environment, is key. But I try to come up with as many gadgets that make noises, and it might be a homemade piece of equipment, or it might be something that you can buy at the dollar store that can keep that student involved.
Yeah, I agree. I love all of my students love the different textures, the grab balls. And Sport Time has some really great adapted things. They've got those grab balls. They've got the feather light ball. They've got the basketball that has the bell in it. They've got the weighted soccer balls that as they kick, they've got sand in them, or they've got birdshot in them. They make noise. I just have an arsenal of those that I will give my PE teachers as they're doing their different units. A lot of times you could find budgeting within your school, within the PTA. I know you purchasing equipment is huge, but if you can get some adapted equipment into your arsenal, your kids will respond to it. They like the sounds, they like the textures, they like the different feels, especially students that have visual impairments. If you can get most departments of the blind and visually impaired, they have resources, they have funds. If you tap into your vision teachers, they can purchase things that are bell balls or that are beep balls that make noise. Just contact your vision specialist for your county and they can get you equipment.
You know, that's an awesome tip to really think about. You know, just on that topic, you know, you just brought up a great resource. Is there any other people that you can really think about, like as far as getting a repertoire of equipment that you could hit up you know, locally to kind of get you, you know, ready to go to teach a variety of students with different disabilities?
Go ahead.
I mentioned the dollar store. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, we as teachers, sometimes rely on just buying our own things. So the dollar store, going into Target and going to the dollar section there, anything that looks fun. I know a lot of the equipment that I use in the pool, I've purchased from the dollar store, or actually sometimes I've stolen from my own kids. If it's a little bouncy ball that lights up, and bounces, and I'm like, oh, I have a student that could work for in the pool. You know, so it's just finding that kind of stuff, or sometimes just homemade material. At our state conference this year, me and another professor from UW-Whitewater just talked about, because when you making your own equipment might be more feasible than sometimes buying that adapted equipment, that sometimes adapted tag on equipment makes it a little bit more expensive. So being able to buy your own, we would, you know, an idea of a 2-liter bottle, stuck onto a wooden dowel that you can make a homemade bat that creates a louding boom sound after you hit a ball, is a lot cheaper than buying an actual bat that says adapted that you get from, some kind of, merchandise magazine. So, sometimes a little of your own creativity can go a long ways when it comes to providing equipment for your students.
Oh, I agree. I think one of the tips that I used was a plunger in a cone. So if you take just a dollar store plunger and put the handle down in a cone, then you have something that will hold the ball on the cone, and it won't knock off as easy. And so there you go. It didn't take much at all. I use the rubber wristbands that everybody gets, any kind, and I use that to help my students that don't like to grasp or have trouble grasping. I will take, you know, a megaloon or a paddle or a foam paddle, and I'll put it down in the wristband, and that helps the student hold. You know, I have tapped into, if you have a university near you, we have Virginia Commonwealth University, VCU, has a school of occupational therapy and physical therapy, and they come to our department every year and they ask for our OTs, PTs, and adapted PE, what can we make? What can we make to help you? And I actually had them make me a couple of years ago an adapted kicker, and all it was a shoe on a pendulum, and you pull it back with a string and you let go, and the shoe moves forward and it kicks a ball. And all of a sudden my students sit in wheelchairs that have very limited movement are playing a kickball game. Yeah. And so tap into your universities, tap into your high school woodshop classes. They make a ton of stuff. I have a friend in Williamsburg whose woodshop class made an archery, an adapted archery bow sitting on the table. And I mean, just tap into those people you have in your community.
Yeah. Yeah. UW-Platteville is known as a big engineering school. And it's been awesome. My practicum class for a couple semesters has worked with the senior mechanical design, because our students are working with students with disabilities, but the mechanical design students need projects to build, and so their projects are equipment for the students that we're working with. So we've had some devices that help shoot basketball for kids that can't get the full extension and get the ball up to the hoop. So they create sort of a slingshot or a catapult that can shoot a basketball. And so they've been great resources. So yeah. And they love those connections with the communities too. Those universities are always looking to be involved with the surrounding communities. And I think that's a great way to get everybody working together. So, we've done that quite often. It's a great point.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to that conversation. Thank you. I think I could probably play it a few times over and learn something new every time I played it. So, again, great thoughts. Thank you for sharing that. Not quite closing it out, but getting there. I'm kind of one of those techie guys. So just your thoughts on technology tools, some apps, you know, things that you might use in APE and or you know, as your regular physical education using or working with students, you know, with special needs in your class. So thoughts on technology?
Yes. So I use whatever technology the student has a lot of the time. So if they come with an iPad, I'll use the communication on that. I have my own. I finally got my own iPad mini for the school system. finally, many years after asking, they gave me one. Exercise Buddy is a good app. It's a little bit costly, but if you confront the cost, it's great working with one-on-one kids with autism, kids that need structure and routine, kids that respond well to token systems or token boards. Exercise Buddy is a good app. I really have enjoyed using it. I have a student that I've been using it with now for about 2 months, and he went from not touching an iPad, not being able to do the single touch, to hand over hand, to now responding and doing catching back and forth with me, touching the iPad after every trial. He responded, and I just needed to tap into that, to that unknown, because he's, you know, nonverbal. It was really hard to understand what to do with him, and he had some behaviors, but that was a way for him to communicate. Exercise Buddy's a good one. Tim, do you have any that you use?
Yeah, Exercise Buddy was going to be one that I was going to first bring up too. I've actually been in some conversations with David Jeslik, the guy that created the app, because we've started to add an aquatic component to that. Because my hope is to incorporate that in my adapted aquatics class. So I've been using that a lot, and our hope is to continue to use that quite a bit and have a partnership somewhat with David. So Exercise Buddy is awesome. I also, as far as when it comes to showing development, I use a lot of Coach's Eye as a way of, I really love the comparison videos that you can do of a before and after, whether it's a week or two after they've been working on a skill. So I use that as just more, somewhat of an assessment tool, I suppose. So Coach's Eye, I know there's one, I think it's changed name, but there's a Coach's Eye that's, an app similar to it, but it's free. Maybe it's called UberSense, maybe. Am I correct on that?
I think it's known as Huddle Technique now, but yes.
Huddle Technique.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. Kind of a free version of a Coach's Eye type of a program, video analysis. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So I tell my students about that. There's a ProLoquo to Go, which is a communication device that quite pricey as well. I've used it, but I am more of a fan of Exercise Buddy just because of the applications to physical education. More for that, I suppose. I use Google a lot, all the different devices, all the different things that you can use with Google. As far as recording information, sending stuff out to parents when it comes to technology. For students with more severe disabilities, so not quite the inclusive environment, I use a lot of AR, augmented reality sites, to help them get on iPads and stuff and shoot baskets and do stuff like that. They get a kick out of that.
We have one. It's a Switch game. It's called Switch Lanes Bowling. Okay. I'm sure it's actually old school, but we put it on the smart boards or we put it on the computers, and they love it. And they can either touch the smart board or they can do computer activated or head switch activated or mouse, however they want to activate it. But they can do bowling, and then there's Switch Lanes Baseball or Switch Hitter Baseball. So they can do baseball and bowling. So talking about more of the, you know, computer style or iPad based games for those students that have limited mobility. They love it. They love it because they can do a bowling game only doing a head switch or touching the board. We do a lot of the music apps, a lot of the cause and effect apps for those students that, you know, may have a visual impairment in addition to multiple disabilities. You know, all they have to do is move their finger just a little bit and it plays a keyboard or does some special music, you know, those kinds of things. And those apps are all free, and there's tons of them to get that reaction from some of the students.
Right. So I guess, you know, as we're kind of wrapping up here, what kind of, did you have, both of you, you know, you have any final thoughts for our listeners out there, whether, you know, just for general physical education teachers or adapted physical education teachers you'd like them to know about, you know, what they're doing or, you know, encouragement or anything like that?
I guess from my perspective, because I get a lot of students that may have never worked with a student directly with a disability. And after that experience, or I guess experience is the greatest teacher. So whether it's a student, a pre-service teacher who is just gaining their first experience, or maybe they're already out in the field, but they've never had an inclusive environment, you just got to have an open mind. It's got to be a student-first perspective, what's going to work best for that student, what's going to work best for my class, and going into it with an open mind. It is all about the attitude, and I know Meredith said it earlier that you know, physical education, to all physical education teachers are adapted FIAT teachers, because that many kids, you know, 25, 30 kids in a class are not going to all learn the same. So we have to be able to approach each one individually, and that's no different for a student with a disability. So don't let that label dictate how you teach. You got to know that student and teach to the student, not to the disability.
Yeah, I would just say you're not an island, like I said earlier. PE should just not be out there by yourself. There is a team of folks, and with every special ed student has a team. And tap into that team and get the help from them on ways to include and different ideas. And do some research. It will change your mind about these students, having them come in. You will love them. They will give you greater joy than you've ever known, just having a bond with some of these students and really seeing the light bulb go off and the switch as far as what they're learning. You know, it might take them longer. It might take more years. It might take more trials. But they get it. When that light bulb goes off, you'll never regret all the time and energy you put into including them.
All right, so many good thoughts. Thank you so much, Tim and Meredith. Quite the dynamic duo today. So we appreciate your insights and your expertise and getting everybody thinking about, you know, those inclusionary strategies. And we just really appreciate you being here and taking time out of your day, you know, to help us all out. So thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so... For the Shape America podcast, I'm Matt Pomeroy.
Yeah, and I'm Colin Brooks. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Look forward to seeing you next time.
Well, that's it for part two of the Adaptive Physical Education Inclusion podcast. Thank you for tuning in. If you got questions, comments, any specific feedback, please email Colin or I at podcast@shapeamerica.org. Feel free to tweet at Matt Pomeroy. That's me. My Twitter username is at physed, PHYSED, _ Pomeroy, POMEROY. Tweet at Colin Brooks at Colin Brooksy, BROOKSIE, all one word, and Meredith Morton at MMORTONADPE. And if you got specific questions for Tim Swenson, feel free to send them to that podcast@shapeamerica.org email, and we can forward them on to him, and you know, he can continue to be part of that discussion as well. So again, we really appreciate them joining us on the show, and we appreciate your feedback. So let us hear it for sure. I got some pretty cool upcoming podcasts, you know, happening soon. We've got reviewing classroom procedures coming up in the month of December, and jumping into January, we're going to take a deep dive into health education, and we're really going to be focused on drugs and alcohol, and what are the best ways to be teaching that, and you know, how can we work that into our curriculum in many different ways, and how can we take a skills-based approach at that? So, going to be a good show on that. And, you know, we're looking to start a new little series here. We're calling it HPE Stories. And we're actually currently right now looking for some volunteers that would like to be a part of that podcast. And we just want to share those heartwarming, heartfelt, amazing stories that everyone has, you know, for You've been teaching for 1 year or 40 years. We know you've got some great stories to share of students that have excelled and, you know, things that have happened and things that you've tried that just went really, really well. And, you know, we just kind of want to put all those together and try a little sharing session and let everybody hear some of the great things that are happening inside your classrooms and that stuff. So it could be kind of cool. Again, contact us if you're interested in doing that. And like to plug the upcoming webinars, but nothing is out there as of right now. The 2017 schedule will be released soon. So look for an email from Shape America from that with that happening. And of course, it's conference and convention season. So that's Southern District Conference is coming up real soon, January 9th through 12th. That's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Again, take a look, see if you can fit that into your schedule and swing on by for some great face-to-face professional development, just like this Central District Conference. It's a little bit later in January, 26th through the 28th in Cedar Falls. Going to be a great show out there. Lots of amazing health and physical education presentations. So if you can swing on by and check that out. And of course, now's the time to start planning on your trip to the National Convention. Won't want to miss this one, March 14th through 18th in Boston, Massachusetts. And again, if you're looking for some reasons to go there, ways to convince your administration, check out that justification toolkit. And under the convention page, you can look at the four attendees and the justification toolkit is there. And I've got some materials you can download and adjust and some emails you can send off and things like that to help get you there. Because trust me, Colin and I would love to see you there and everybody else who will be attending. So looking forward to it. And again, we appreciate you tuning in to the Shape America podcast. It's been an amazing episode and hope everyone's having a great month of December and happy holidays to everybody. And I know you'll be hearing from us soon. So from my good buddy Colin Brooks, I am Matt Pomeroy, and I am signing off for the Shape America podcast.